Gaddafi, who for nearly 15 years was labeled a pariah by the U.S., gave up parts of his nuclear weapons program and pledged to join the so-called War on Terror, he then gained valuable access.
There's a central contradiction in the War on Terror, as you can call it a crusade for freedom or that it's really about promoting democracy, but the reality was is it pushed the United States into closer cooperation with the security forces, the intelligence agencies, and the governments in a number of autocratic places.
Bush supporters argue that while some of the money went to governments that were controlled by dictators, the U.S. also spent money on democracy programs in those very same countries.
Most of the regimes in the world are run by bad guys. Some of those bad guys are more open to American assistance and American influence than others.
A point the president often highlighted.
There's something healthy about people campaigning, saying this is what I'm for.
Much of the emphasis, and about $175 million over a decade, was spent promoting democracy in the occupied Palestinian territories. An election was held in 2006, and Hamas won a majority of the seats. The Bush administration refused to recognize it.
The United States does not support political parties that want to destroy our ally Israel.
But around the globe, U.S. dollars continued to be used to find friends in the fight against al-Qaeda, even under a new president.
I've come here to Cairo to seek a new beginning.
But even with millions going to keep their people in power, people on the streets were able to bring some of them down. Those still there are still getting paid for their help.
There will be times when our short-term interests don't align perfectly with our long-term vision for the region.
In a conflict under a new president, no longer called the War on Terror, but still being fought and funded in much the same way. Patty Culhane, Al Jazeera, Washington.
Now, looking at how 9/11 affected people. Soon after the attacks, many New Yorkers rolled up their sleeves and tried to clear up. One man among them was inspired to make a radical career change. Gabriel Elizondo traveled from Arizona to Santa Fe in New Mexico to meet him.
Through to fruition, which doesn't.
On September 10th, 2001, Andrew Phelps never imagined where he would be today.
Sort of my pre-9/11 life, I was an actor and a writer and director in New York City, doing a lot of theater stuff. This post right here is for a play I adapted based on Edgar Allan Poe's stories. I was working at the F.A.O. Schwartz toy store in New York City as one of their toy soldiers, standing out front and greeting customers. Extremist groups out of the Middle East that were targeting the United States. That wasn't something that certainly kept me up at night or was even on my radar.
But then he woke up to 9/11, witnessed the towers falling, and suddenly something didn't feel right. Phelps badly wanted to help, so he snuck his way into Ground Zero and joined the rescue crews removing rubble.
I had moved up pretty high up on this pile, and I was talking to a court security officer and an NYPD guy, and you know, right away they said, "Oh, are you an EMT?" And I said, "No, I'm not. I'm an actor." And they didn't care. They were happy, I guess, to have an extra set of hands, I guess. And, you know, I wanted to run down there and save lives. I was in no way qualified to do that.
What I think this story really represents are all those people that were indirectly affected by the events of 9/11, those people that got up, looked themselves in the mirror, and rethought life. Phelps threw away the toy store costume and his Hollywood ambitions and went back to school, and he is now one of the emergency preparedness managers for the state of New Mexico.
That one bad thing, I witnessed it, and it was horrible, but it put me on this other career path, and now, because of that experience that I had, I go to work every day and I talk to local emergency managers about how they can plan for their communities. I know why it is I'm doing what I'm doing, and I know that I wouldn't be in this profession and doing what I'm doing had September 11th not happened.
Gabriel Elizondo, Al Jazeera.
Thanks for listening to Al Jazeera English on the Radio, broadcast exclusively by the Pacifica Radio Network, Free Speech Radio.
There's a Hole in the City by Richard Bowes. Wednesday, 9/12/01. On the evening of the day after the towers fell, I was waiting by the barricades on Houston Street on LaGuardia Place.
On Sunday, September 11th, As part of WBAI's special anniversary programming, the next hour, with guest host Jim Freund, we'll feature this award-winning story, followed by an interview with Rick Bowes and the preeminent psychologist on contemporary terrorism, Dr. Charles B. Strozier. That's September 11th at 11 a.m. on the next hour, featuring Richard Bowes reading There's a Hole in the City.
This is Phil Donahue, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
And this is WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Mike.
Hello.
Voltaire.
Hey.
Kyle.
Good evening.
Jim.
Hello.
And down in Philadelphia, Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
And boy, do we have an action-packed show for you tonight. We have all kinds of fun things to talk about, things to look forward to, even a giveaway we've got coming up in just a few minutes. So be patient. Be patient. We're going to have all kinds of fun tonight. Like I've been discussing, I've been having all kinds of fun every time I come into the country, and as promised, I've been doing some follow-up on that. I just wanted to give people a bit of an update, maybe get some advice from people here in the studio, maybe from our listeners as well. Now, when I was detained coming into the country again, I demanded to know what's going on here. Why do I keep getting cast aside and put into this room for secondary screening? And they gave me this little green piece of paper, a white piece of paper with green writing on it, called "What is DHS Trip?" from Homeland Security. And it's just, it sounds like a bad drug experience. You have DHS Trip going on here.
Is it like a wire that they string in front of you so you fall into the secondary screening room?
It feels that way. But here's how they explain it. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Travel Redress Inquiry Program, which coincidentally spells T-R-I-P, provides a single portal for travelers to seek redress. Am I saying that right? Because that's not a word I usually say.
Yeah.
It's not redress. Redress. Okay. To seek redress for adverse screening experiences and to resolve possible watch list misidentification issues. For example, travelers may seek redress because they have been delayed or denied boarding, delayed or denied entry into the U.S. at a port of entry, or been subject to additional/secondary screening or inspection. it is important to understand that travelers may be referred for additional screening or inspection for reasons other than information in law enforcement databases, such as the circumstances of their travel or a random selection. Individuals who receive redress through DHS TRIP may still be referred for additional screening for unrelated reasons in the future. If you have concerns about other elements of your travel experience, such as damage to goods, please contact the agency under whose jurisdiction the problem occurred. Now, under this section, how to submit a DHS TRIP inquiry. To initiate an inquiry, please log on to DHS TRIP's interactive website at www.dhs.gov/trip. There, you will be prompted to describe your particular concerns and experience, provide contact information to which a response will be directed, and be assigned a case number to help you monitor the progress of your inquiry. In addition, depending on your inquiry, documentation may be required. The United States makes every effort to ensure that travelers' records are accurate, their privacy is protected, and the treatment they receive from DHS officials is professional and fair. Information submitted through DHS TRIP will be protected and will only be shared in accordance with the provisions of the Privacy Act of 1974 and as provided in the Privacy Impact Assessment published for DHS TRIP. Now, when and how you'll receive a response, DHS TRIP will process your request completely, accurately, and as quickly as possible. In certain cases, supporting documentation may be required. We encourage you to submit any additional information within 30 days to facilitate the processing of your request. And you may check the status of your request at any time through the DHS website, www.dhs.gov/trip. If you want more information about the U.S. government's privacy and redress policies and procedures, and to access frequently asked questions, please visit the website also at the same address, www.dhs.gov/trip. And so I filled out the form. I answered, I did a little checkbox thing as to the things that applied to me. Here are some of the possibilities. I am always subjected to additional screening when going through an airport security checkpoint. No, not true. Doesn't always happen to me on the way out. I was denied boarding. No, I wasn't denied boarding. I'm unable to print a boarding pass at the airport kiosk or at home. No, I've learned how to do that. I am directed to a ticket counter every time I fly. Again, not applicable. The airline ticket agent stated that I am on a federal government watch list, if only, but I've never gotten anything that direct. I was detained during my travel experience. Bingo, yes. That's definitely the theme of my travel experience. A ticket agent took my identification and called someone before handing me a boarding pass. No, that did not happen either. That happens in the movies a lot, though. I missed my flight while attempting to obtain a boarding pass. You would have heard about it, believe me, if through other circumstances, if that had happened. But no, that didn't happen either. I am repeatedly referred for secondary screening when clearing U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Yes, that applies to me very directly. I was denied entry into the United States. That's coming. That day is going to come at some point, but hasn't happened yet. I am a foreign student or exchange visitor who is unable to travel due to my status. No, I was told my fingerprints were incorrect or of poor quality. Is that an earthquake or is somebody just shoving somebody into the studio? Okay. The whole room just shook for a second.
It sounds like construction or something.
Or destruction.
Yeah, maybe.
Or we're preparing for a special 9/11 celebration downstairs, I'm sure. I was told my fingerprints were incorrect or of poor quality. How can fingerprints be incorrect? I feel my civil rights have been violated because I was discriminated against on the basis of my race, ethnicity, religion, disability, or gender. Well, I can't say any of that was applicable in this case, but maybe because of the way my brain operates or something, but that doesn't really count.
I mean, they won't tell you why you're being held up. You know,
no,
it could
they
be
won't.
For any of those
but
reasons.
But did I feel that my civil rights were violated because of that? And I can't say that it was on the basis of race, ethnicity, religion, disability, or gender. I don't think so. I feel my civil rights have been violated because my questioning or treatment during screening was abusive or coercive. They've always been pretty nice. I mean, Kyle, when we went across the border with Canada, they were kind of nasty there. But I'm talking about this particular case where they don't even ask any questions, really. They just sort of look you over and check things and delay you.
They damage your book, though.
No, those were the checks. Okay. Those were the checks. And those bastards I'm going to get to in due time. Yeah, that was because I had the 4S as my boarding pass and they tore my luggage apart. Same trip, too. Imagine that, being subjected to this on the way out and when you get welcomed home as well. It's simply unbelievable. I feel my civil rights have been violated because a search of my person or property violated freedom of speech or press. I'm not sure I can say that they violated freedom of speech or press. I feel that as a violation of some sort, but I can't say specifically it was that. I believe my privacy has been violated because a government agent has exposed or inappropriately shared my personal information. Well, I don't know about that, but maybe that's happening. I was given an information sheet by a CBP officer. I wasn't given any sheet. I was given that little card. I was told by a CBP at a U.S. port of entry that my fingerprints need to be corrected by a U.S. visit. And no, that did not happen either. Other travel-related issue. I didn't check that one either. I just want to get this over with. I filled out the form. I explained what happened. I said that I really want this to end. I wanted to find out what's going on here. I got a little a page with a redress control number, which I'm not going to read over the air. But I will say that they said afterwards to complete the process, you have to mail or email copies of the following documents to DHS. A copy of my passport. I assume a copy of the page that has my name on it, and that information, not a copy of every single page on it, and a signed copy of this page. And you can either email that or send it via mail. I have it here in an envelope. Here it is. Have not yet mailed it out, but I'm going to mail it out as soon as I get the okay from the people in the studio that this is a good idea to do this. In this envelope is a signed copy of that page and a copy of the page of my passport that has all my information on it.
It doesn't count unless you actually stick it in the mailbox.
Well, I'm going to stick it in the mailbox. But as you can see, it's a tension control number, and there's my control number. So my control number is now part of the address. I'm not giving it to you.
All right.
Yeah, that's what you get. You get a piece of paper, and within 30 days, they're supposed to receive this, and then they're supposed to respond. So we're going to find out something. We'll find out if they actually say anything.
I bet they don't.
You think they won't say anything?
I mean, I think you should try, yeah. But I'm not optimistic.
What do you think, Barney?
I think this is probably a waste of time, but it could be entertaining to see what happens. I don't think you're going to find out anything about why you're being detained.
Well, that would be unfortunate, because then I'll have to just keep asking and raising the volume of my voice, which is something I'm prepared to do. But it's annoying. It makes you not want to travel. It makes you not want to come back. And I think there are a lot of people that are experiencing things like this, and they'd like to know why, too. So it's an educational experience for all of us.
I was chatting at the CCC conference with Jake Applebaum, who's got this, you know, phenomenon times like 100.
Whoa, you talk directly to him. You're on the list now, too, then.
Yeah, well, I'm apparently not, but and they won't tell him why either, so I don't know what your odds are.
Yeah, well, he seems to go through the same thing, too.
I mean, he gets it times 10, but, you know.
The thing is, I was never part of WikiLeaks, and he was, and I'm not sure exactly what the connection is.
I'm a little optimistic. I hope this leads to it actually stopping. Like, forget why. I mean, that'd be great if they told you why, but I hope it just stops because, like you said, it's they're not really doing very much. It's just going through motions that are kind of needless. And even in Canada, when we were driving, it was really late and they were just sort of bored and thought they could, it was just sort of like wear them out with the clock kind of thing. Like, how long can we make them sit here until something credible or something we can twist into something? But it's all just motions that are needless. So I really hope that what comes out of this is that it stops so you can travel freely and do the good things that we've, you know, been doing. So.
You can always find something on somebody to detain them and ask them a whole lot of questions. In the last case, when we were going over from Canada, it was, well, you're in a smart car with Quebec license plates and it technically belongs to somebody else because you don't live in Quebec. You know, it's perfectly legal, perfectly normal. But we were getting a lecture about, well, you know, if this is your primary car and you're driving around in New York, you can get in a lot of trouble for that. And it's not the primary car. And we know this. And there's no reason to keep us for an hour to give us this lecture. And eventually they let you go. Another time I had a Canadian satellite receiver in my trunk. There's nothing wrong with that either. But that led to a whole lot of third degree. Years ago, having a credit card with a pseudonym, which is also completely legal as long as you pay the bill, that led to a whole big thing as well. So they can always find something unusual about you. And you remember when we were there, they just kept asking us the same questions over and over again. There'd be a period of maybe 25 minutes when nothing was said. Then all of a sudden they would say, Kyle, how do you know this other person?
Right.
Where did
right.
you meet? And we'd already answered this question several times. And they just keep hammering away. I think they believe they're on some kind of crime-fighting show or something like that.
I agree with you in the sense that, like, you're at the mercy of their interpretation of the circumstance. But in the long run, I think it doesn't help that there's some checkbox in some system somewhere that's just aggravating the situation because, again, you're needlessly pulled aside in the secondary screen. I'd also say that the way you filled that out sounds pretty good. You didn't exaggerate, and I personally probably would have been tempted because it feels awful, all that emotion, but having let like some time pass a little bit, I feel like you you approached it fairly rationally and that you answered exactly like, this is what's going on. This is what I'm sick of. I'm sick of being pulled aside at secondary screening when I'm coming into the country. So please stop it.
And I had no choice but to wait because I was without power for a full week. So I wasn't able to actually easily do this. So plenty of time to contemplate and look at the dark sky and figure out just how it is I wanted to approach this. And now we're going to see what happens. And yes, like I said, the checks are next. They're going to get their comeuppance for ripping my bag and hurting the book I was trying to protect and just treating me like a terrorist. Do you realize I was the most dangerous person on that airplane, according to them? It was incredible. A full packed airplane, probably in the airport as well. Mm-hmm. It was really bizarre and weird.
I mean, the thing is, it may be true because for all this security hoopla, there really aren't that many people out there who are that dangerous.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't seem like mm-hmm. they're, at least they're not finding them if there are. All right, enough about my problems, the ongoing story that never seems to end. We have some fun things coming up in the next couple of weeks. Do you remember, guys, a year ago what was going on about this time of year? Well, Kyle, you weren't here. You were over in Seattle. But Mike, I know you were around.
Yeah.
And Voltaire, you were around. And Jim, you were around too.
You're referring to the leaves turning colors, of course.
Of course. I'm referring to the turning of the leaves. Yeah. And I'm referring to the Maker Faire, which is coming back to New York City. It's coming back to the Hall of Science, New York Hall of Science, the former World's Fairground area of Queens. And we went there last year with the 2600 van, hung out, met a lot of listeners. A lot of people came by and just hung out, talked to us. And there are a lot of different science projects going on. A lot of kids showed up learning all kinds of things. It was really festive. And I got to say, for the first time since I think I was – there's that noise again. You see? Someone's thumping. yeah, maybe it's a science experiment here in this building as well. But a lot of people just learned a lot that weekend. It was the first time I had gone back to that area where the World's Fair was since I was a little kid. So it was really cool to see all that. So that's coming up, not this weekend coming up, but the weekend after that. And we have one of the chief organizers of the Maker Faire in New York City. Sherry Huss joins us from California. Sherry, are you with us?
I am. Thank you.
Well, how did last year play out? Was last year considered an incredible success?
Yeah, absolutely. We were incredibly thrilled. We had about 25,000 people over the course of the weekend, and a lot of great diversity in families, in ages, and you name it. We had a lot of folks there, and and it's part of the reason that we're back this year. And it seems like we're on in full force because it's been pretty crazy busy around here, and we're looking forward to another great event this year.
Could we just take a step back and ask you, Sherry, for maybe some of our listeners are living under rocks
sure.
or things? What is the Maker Faire?
You bet. So Maker Faire is part of we're actually a division of O'Reilly Media. So I would assume most of your listeners probably have had some O'Reilly book in their library or have used O'Reilly. The Make division, we have a magazine called Make that's out, I think, volume 27 now, so we're just finishing our seventh year. And Maker Faire is the festival that celebrates folks that make things. So we kind of think of it as a newfangled county fair, and we try to incorporate not only technology, but folks that actually like to kind of get physical and hands-on with projects, whether it's electronics or crafting or food. And that's why it sort of seems like it is a new World's Fair, and it's great to be back in New York since it seems like it's a really good location for us.
Yeah, it certainly does. And I'm amazed that 25,000 people just showed up last year when it was the first time
yep.
this had ever been held. How do you reach out to all these people through the magazine?
Part of it is that we kind of aggregate and pull together such diverse communities that a lot of those communities market to their communities. We also have a good partner with the New York Hall of Science where they have lots of programs and activities into schools, a lot of different connections, and we're finally, this will be our 12th Maker Faire since 2006.
12th overall throughout the world.
12th overall, kind of big Maker Faire. So I anticipate that by the end of this fair, we should probably have touched about 500,000 people over these 6 years. Wow. And that would be 2 events in New York, 2 in Detroit, 2 in Austin, and 6 in the Bay Area. So it's definitely growing. I think that there's a movement out there, and we're trying to put out mini maker fairs and let communities kind of roll their own, if you will. So if you're a school, a church, a community, and you want to put a maker fair on in your community, we have a way for that to happen now, and we've created a playbook. And we really all just want to encourage folks making things.
Now, the website is makerfair.com. That's spelled makerfaire.com.
Okay.
And there's a New York section there. And you can find all kinds of information about exactly when and where and how to go. We're going to be giving away some tickets to this in just a little bit, so stay tuned and be ready to call in. Sherry, do you know some of the highlights, some of the things that people can look forward to this year?
For this year, absolutely. I'd say there's 3 things, and I think one of at least one or two of them I think your audience will be interested in. One is Arduino is incredibly hot this year.
Yeah, I'm looking at that right now.
so you're going to actually... Massimo Bonzi, who's the co-founder of the Arduino project, will be on site, and he's going to actually be making some announcements, I think talking about kind of the next generation of the Arduino boards, and as well as we'll have an Arduino tent. And actually, many of you may know Phil Tarone, who's one of our senior editors.
We know Phil
well,
yes.
Put a call out to Atmel earlier in the year to say, and Atmel makes the microprocessor on the Arduino card, and said, "Hey, where are you? You know, the community wants you to be here." And so Atmel is actually coming, which we think
somebody,
is really great.
Would somebody in the studio like to just quickly explain what Arduino is to the uninitiated listener? Anybody? Kyle, go ahead.
Okay, I would be a bit uninitiated, but I know vaguely. Arduinos are microcontroller project boards. You can basically build all kinds of things and control them with software. And that's about all I know. I actually should probably take one of these workshops and get introduced to it myself. But that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Arduino 101 sounds like it's for you.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things being offered.
And we'll actually have, like, beginning, intermediate, and advanced Arduino sessions on site. And actually, as I said, there'll be a whole Arduino area, so people doing kind of interesting things. And as I understand it, you don't have to be a programmer. So for more of the creative community that really wants to figure out how to drive motors or how to make things work without really, you know, spending time learning to be a software programmer, that it's fairly easy to make things happen. So that's a pretty big deal. We have Health 2.0, which is kind of an interesting take on folks and companies and students kind of looking at sort of new ways where you can kind of monitor your health through a variety of different platforms. The Connect platform will be used quite a bit. We have a few student projects from NYU ITP program, which will be kind of cool. In fact, NYU ITP program has a whole ITP cafe, so a lot of student projects there. And then we have Young Makers. So it's we're finally through a lot of the efforts last year that happened in New York and with our partner, the New York Hall of Science. We had Tom Khalil, who's there from the White House Office of Science and Technology Programs, that came and was part of the program last year and will be part of it this year, where they're really starting to say, hey, making is a really important part. And Dale Doherty, who's the founder of our group, is, you know, really kind of working to make this happen and kind of shake up the school systems a bit to, you know, get kids making and hands-on again versus just taking tests.
Well, how has the reaction been from schools, from teachers, as far as getting young people involved in this?
You know, I think they love it. I think a lot of teachers are probably fairly frustrated with what's happening in the schools. So those that are sort of enlightened will be there. The New York Hall of Science on a regular day, I think, puts through about 5,000 kids. So actually, we probably couldn't have a better partner where they can kind of get the word out. And after Maker Faire and as part of the Go Forward, there's a company called Cognizant, which is a very large engineering company. They'll be making an investment to have a year-round makerspace at the Hall of Science, and they want to start rolling these out into other communities as well. So I think that's kind of a cool thing that happens from this. Another cool thing that you're going to see this year, and actually your van is going to be an area, is we have a whole area devoted to hackerspaces. So
yes, I heard about this.
You'll see, and in fact, yeah, more cool stuff kind of keeps coming in every day. But in addition to kind of New York's Alpha One and NYC Resistor, we have the folks coming in. I3 Detroit is coming in. We've got Third Ward, We have groups like HTINC that are going to be actually having a pretty big hands-on area. MakerBot is going to be having a whole kind of a racetrack area, and I'm not even sure I understand it, but they've got a lot of crazy things happening.
They usually have
3D printing village, and they'll have like over 35 different kind of hobby-level 3D printers there, and they told me that last year they had 12,000 people that visited their booth alone, which was pretty cool. So I think you're going to see a lot of interesting things happening, and Willow Brew, that you may know from, Space Foundry, they're coming in. They're kind of just to help get hackerspaces going, and they'll be sort of a lead in that area as well. So many hackerspace activities and a lot of hands-on, and then, of course, we've got the folks from Tool coming in with lockpicking, which is always a favorite. Of just about everyone.
Well, you know, it sounds a lot like a hacker conference there with all these people with hackerspaces and lockpickers and a lot of kids running around experimenting and building things. That's it's really awesome to have this kind of spirit and to have so many people involved.
No, it's absolutely great. And that's just, you know, kind of one component. We actually still have, we kind of break things into arts and crafts and science and sustainability and, you know, some of the bigger companies there that want to get involved in this. Radio Shack has kind of made a pledge to get back into the kind of hands-on kit space. So they'll be having kind of builds for people to actually think that they'll have a bat or a flashlight that has like four or five components to put together. So to kind of get people doing that. We've got, I mentioned Cognizant, we have General Electric there, and they've got their Healthy Imagination, Eco-Imagination campaign. They're there with a solar-powered 1939 carousel. It's going to be all tricked out, so a little bit of a festival fair roundabout as well. And then we've got makers that are doing really cool things, too. We've got the Water Swing, which comes out of Brooklyn. It's from Dash 7 Design. Michael O'Toole and Drew have created this, like, 11-foot-tall, kind of a basic swing that you swing through. And when you there's some sensors that are in there. It's usually pouring down water, but when you kind of break the sensor, the water stops when you go through. So that it's a hot day. That's going to be a lot of fun, too. And then we have, you know, there's like the Circus Warehouse, which is a group out of Queens that we found that actually teach people, you know, if you want to become a circus performer, this is where you go. So they'll be, you know, showing folks how to do that. We'll have a lot of kids activities. We've got the Tornado Interceptor vehicle. If you watch Storm Chasers, Sean Casey has created this vehicle. That will be there. We have the Sashimi Tabernacle car. I don't know if you've seen this one. It's Richard Carter out of Houston.
Uh-huh.
Has this old Vobel that has, you know, probably hundreds of Billy the Bass fish and lobsters that actually it's all wired together with LEDs, and so when songs play, it goes off, and it's incredibly cool. We've got Gong Kieran, which was just a recent entry. That's a project between Ryan Doyle and Teddy Liu, or Lo, who actually... It's a 90-foot dragon. We showcased it. It's a fire-breathing dragon. We showcased it at Maker Faire in Detroit, and they want it to be in New York, so they're bringing it.
Fire-breathing dragon. Okay.
Yep. I think it started as a Burning Man art car project, and it's pretty awesome. In fact, if you look at the Maker Faire Detroit pictures, you probably will see it in some of the pictures, but
Did you mention the thing from last year? I forget what it was. It had a jet engine.
Sort of spectacle performance and whatnot.
The thing from last year had a jet engine, I think, that and it was like racing around. What was that?
Oh, yes. So that was Madagascar Institute. And Madagascar, actually, Hackett will be there. Hackett, who's the founder, who maybe you guys have noticed, he's got a show called Stuck with Hackett. He's going to be giving a presentation on Saturday. They didn't get it all together this year, but I suspect we'll see them back next year.
Mm-hmm.
But they did have the jet ponies, which they had made a kind of a jet engine pony ride.
That
was amazing. You know, people had either loved it or they hated it, because as soon as it you know, started up, it created this incredibly loud sound. But I will say, in some strange way, it kind of got everyone paying attention.
Well, that's the thing. It was incredibly loud. You could hear it from space, it sounded like, but nobody minded, because it was just part of the whole magic of the event itself. And people were sort of drawn to it. Yeah.
So,
Friend of mine had his project not too far from there, and he did mind.
Oh, well, some people are grouchy, but other people just kind of take it all in stride. And,
that's why we'll probably do it every other year.
but there'll be other
surprises
this year that that we we'll just notice and say, oh wow, that was the one from 2011, and all kinds of fun things will happen as a result. Wow.
Exactly. Then we have the architect. I don't know if you made it last year, but in the Great Hall, which is in the New York Hall of Science, is a pretty special place.
Are they going to be there? Architect is going to be there.
Architect will be back.
Oh, good.
And
okay.
They will be in the Great Hall, and I'm not sure what's happening. There was a whole conversation about them wanting to put their Tesla coils up on what are those called? Kind of like forklifts, and they were going to rewire the panels and. I'm not sure what's happening with that, but I guarantee Joe DiPrimo will be putting on a great show.
Well, last year I was put in the Faraday cage, so I can attest to that.
Oh, you did?
But,
yep.
We'll certainly be talking to them this year.
They will, and every show I see, Joe continues to outdo himself, so people will not be disappointed with that either.
Wow. Boy, it's really something to look forward to. Again, it's not this weekend coming up. It's the weekend after that, Saturday.
17th and 18th, Sunday, yep.
17th and 18th, and it's easily accessible on the number 7 train for those of you coming from Manhattan or other parts of Queens, and it's at the New York Hall of Science. Full information is at makerfaire.com, M-A-K-E-R-F-A-I-R-E. com. Now, what we're going to do? We have six. Well, this is kind of awkward to explain. I'm going to try to explain it as best I can. Either six pairs of tickets for one day, or six individual tickets for 2 days. So, in other words, if you win one of the tickets, you can either go Saturday and Sunday as one person, or you can bring a friend for Saturday, or bring a friend for Sunday. Is that right?
You nailed it. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
You can come the next day, too, but you'll have to pay.
Yeah, of course, you can come anytime you want. Anybody can come, absolutely. And what we're going to do, because otherwise I think it might get a little crazy, we're going to ask people to email us, oth@2600.com. And, of course, this is for local listeners, people who are in the area. If you're in California, it doesn't make much sense unless you're going to fly out for – I guess you could do that. But then you're probably listening now anyway, and maybe you'll do that. Email us, oth@2600.com. At around 11 o'clock tonight, what we're going to do is take all the emails that we've gotten and pick six at random and email you back with a special URL that will get you the passes that you need to get in. If you don't have, first of all, you're going to need an email address because we have to email you the URLs. But if you don't have internet access, well, you have at least 3 hours now to go out to a coffee shop or something, or find a friend with a computer and get access. Everybody's got access, but you have 3.5 hours. BAI listeners are very enterprising, and I'm sure that you'll be able to do that. oth@2600.com. We'll pick six at random and email you back by tomorrow for sure. How does that sound?
That sounds amazing.
Amazing? Okay, yeah. Good. Bernie, any questions from Philadelphia?
I thought Maker Faire was great last year. I enjoyed it, except for the part about my car breaking down on the way. But at least it broke down right across the highway from the Maker Faire.
Bernie has a tradition of going to out-of-town conferences and having his car break down on the way at some point. You've done that in Dayton. You've done that at Hope. You've done that at Maker Faire now. I think there's other – was it Nauticon? Did you break down on the way there too? Or?
It's more exciting that way, Emmanuel.
It
but
is.
I had a great time, and I especially enjoyed the giant mousetrap game that was set up last year. That was really awesome. What was the name of the group that did that again?
It's the Life Size Mousetrap, and they will be back. And this year, instead of smashing a taxi cab, they're going to smash a New York police car.
Now, wait a minute. Cool. Hold on a second. I want in on that. how exactly does that work?
Well, the Mousetrap is actually, it's Mark Perez, who is from San Francisco. They're on tour this summer, and he's created this life-size version of the Mousetrap game that we all played as kids. And so the playing piece is a bowling ball. The bathtub is actually a closet bathtub. There's a 5,000-pound safe that they crank up, and through a series of mice and clowns and marks sort of, walking people through what it is, it's kind of a great spectacle and a lot of fun for folks. So it's called the Life-Size Mousetrap, and I think that it goes five times a day, 11:30, 12:30, 2:30, 3:30, and 5:30.
Okay. Wow.
I want to know more about the smashing a police car bit.
Yeah. So that perked our interest up here.
Well,
at radio
station. Safe. The idea is, if everything goes well, it's a large Rube Goldberg device. Uh-huh. If the ball goes through this, it's laid out on about 6,500 square feet. If it all goes well at the end, it will release a safe, and a safe will come down and smash something, and people tend to like cars being smashed. And so last year they had a taxi cab, and this year they decided, you know, in true New York spirit, they're going to do it on a New York police cruiser.
Now, if there's a particular police car that I'd like to suggest for this, how would I submit?
I'm sure Mark would love to pick any input on the car.
Okay, I have a few a few possibilities there. There's something I'm looking at here on the website which really caught my attention. Hacking autism, using technology to give people with autism a voice. That sounds fascinating.
Yep, you'll find that that's actually a group that's actually kind of working, doing a lot of research, helping kids that have autism. HP is sort of one of their parent or corporate sponsors for that, and they'll be in the Health 2.0 Pavilion. So pretty interesting stuff, and it's kind of great to see that this community is actually kind of making a difference in those areas too.
Yeah, it's really cool to see that. So again, we're talking about the Maker Faire taking place the weekend of the 17th and 18th here in New York City in Queens at the New York Hall of Science. Again, we're giving away six pairs of tickets to either one day or individual tickets to both days. Just write to us, oth@2600.com. Doesn't matter if you send something in an hour from now. It's not first come, first serve. It's going to be random. We're going to write a little routine and do a randomized thing after the show, and we'll pick six lucky winners and email them back. For those of you who don't win, you can still come to the Maker Faire. It's very affordable. We can't give out prices over the air, but we can say it's very affordable and accessible, and just a lot of fun, literally for the whole family and then some. I've seen very old people and very young people each participating, and I was especially impressed by all the young people that showed up last year.
No, absolutely, and it's, you know, I think that one of our goals is to make makers, and you know, there's probably no better group of folks to get engaged in things than the kids, and we're finding that actually even families are kind of coming together over making again, which is actually a really cool thing. We have in the Maker Shed, there's something as simple as like learn to solder for $1, and they do thousands of those pins, and usually a family will sit down and I had two really great stories from last year, New York Maker Faire in particular. One is a 13-year-old boy learned to solder with his family, and, you know, he was savvy enough to reach out and contact Louise, who's our show producer, to say, hey, I learned to solder last year, and this year I want to become a maker, and I want to teach people how to make a robot. So within 1 year from that little kid learning how to solder, he's now going to be a maker this year, you know, showing other kids his age to, you know, how to do something with that. So that's really wonderful. And another great story was another mother had called me, and it was one of those calls like, oh, boy, what does she want? And when I started talking to her, she had said that they're from New Jersey. They had a boy he's going in seventh grade. So he was out of elementary school, going to middle school, was a train wreck in school. He had cerebral palsy and autism. And, you know, they weren't even sure what was going to happen. It was just one day they decided, let's just go to Maker Faire. You know, how bad can it be? Turns out he saw the Diet Coke and Mentos show, and when he had gone into junior high that next year, his teacher didn't know his background, didn't care, said, we've got a science experiment. It's a science fair coming up. You guys all need to go home and do something. And he went and created his own little video, a viral video, doing his own version of Diet Coke and Mentos. And it turned out that he submitted it into the regional science fair, and now the mom said they're talking about him going to college, which she said, you know, he was completely out of everything before, and just sort of one experience that made it happen. So that's sort of one really great thing about Maker Faire, and I think you guys all know it because you're all into sort of getting hands-on and figuring things out and being part of the community, and I think that that's probably what's missing in a lot of places, and that's probably what people will be able to find at Maker Faire this weekend.
We hear that kind of thing from the Hope conferences that we run every other year, all the time. People who come to New York for the first time and just experience something and meet other people that are into the same things they're into, and it kind of changes your life. It inspires you to do more things, and it's great to hear that happening on this level as well with so many other people.
I agree.
That's really incredible. We've been speaking with Sherry Huss. You're the director of the Maker Faire, right?
I am the director, and I'm maker and chief of the whole Make unit. So we've got Make Magazine, we have Maker Shed, we have Craft, we have Make Online, and Maker Faire. So
I don't know how you found time to talk to us with all those projects you have to work
well,
on.
Well, it's good. Actually, we've got a really great group of people here working on stuff. So
It was fun. A blast last time, and you know, we're not just saying this. It really was something that so many BAI listeners showed up, and it was just really cool to meet so many of them. So, anything else that you'd like to add or let people know about?
No, I think it's. I mean, thank you for reaching out, and you know, we're glad to support you guys in any way that we can, because what you're doing is really valuable as well. And we're glad that you'll be part of the event, and hopefully, you'll get many more new listeners and followers. And you know, check us out on website as we get closer to the event next week. More things will be coming up, and you'll see a great. You know, there's a lot of speakers there too, although it's so hard to compete with a lot of other things that are going on, but. We've got a couple little guest surprises in there, like John Hodgman, who's going to show up and do. He's the resident expert on The Daily Show. He's going to do our magic tricks, really magic, and so you'll see him around. For the women in your life, there's the Buscraft Tacular, so for people that want to shop, we'll have that. I don't think anyone will be disappointed. And if for those that want to volunteer, we can still use volunteers, and then you can get in free and be part of it as well. And I think it's NYVolunteers@makerfair.com. So don't let money keep you out of not participating. We'd love to have you there in any way, shape, or form. So
yeah, I want to thank you guys for being so inclusive, because yeah, you do say that very prominently on your website, that we're looking for people to really plunge in and get involved in helping us
Absolutely.
Organize that. And that's what drives successful events is getting people to be a part of it themselves, not just be attendees. And
We'll take any and all help that we can get. And thanks again for having us on the show, and look forward to seeing you guys at Maker Faire.
All right, Sherry, thanks very much for talking with us, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Great. Take care, everyone.
Good
Bye-bye.
Night. And that was Sherry Huss, who is one of the main people behind all of this. And wow, it's a lot of fun. It really is. For those of you who have not been there, we hope that you show up, and either if you win the tickets or if you just come on your own, it's going to be a blast.
I guess we should give people one more chance to hear our email addresses.
Well, we can give them several more chances. Well, we can give them chances all the way up to the top of the hour, because we're not going to be reading the emails till after the show. So.
All right. Well, one of the chances.
Here's the first
Maybe
chance.
Not the final chance
the
to hear
first
our email
of the
address.
The final chances. Yes, go ahead.
OTH@2600.com. And if you email us there and you're one of the lucky six, then we will tell you how to get your free tickets.
Yes, we'll be sending you an email back with a lucky URL that will basically what you do is you go to that URL and you select however you want to get your tickets, and you'll be on a list. I think that's how it works. But we'll make sure that you understand everything about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, OTH@2600.com is our email address.
And if you just want to go and buy tickets yourself or learn more, you can go to makerfair.com.
Right, spelled the way we've been spelling it, makerfaire.com. I don't know what happens if we leave off that last E, but just put it in there to be safe, and I'm sure everybody will have a much more pleasant time. Kyle, you have not been to one of these things yet, have you? But I think you will be.
Yeah, I remember hearing about how much fun you had last year, and since I'm in town, I think I'm going to try to make it this year. Well, and I'm blown away. She just kept going and going with so many activities and so much cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And being a part of events, going and seeing what other people are doing, that's how I got involved, and it's really had an impact on my life. I can't wait to kind of share some of the things we're doing and see what other people are doing, and just mix it up and have some fun.
And it's good that it's raining so much now, because that means it won't be raining then, probably. As mentioned, yes, we'll be there as well. The 2600 van will hopefully make its way into Queens and be able to be on display there in all its fine glory. And that was a big success last year. A lot of people had fun taking pictures of it and things like that. There's other things that happened this week, other things that are still going on that we want to focus on. And of course, we also want to take phone calls as well. Let's quickly delve into this and get as much out of it as we possibly can. The WikiLeaks thing, WikiLeaks back in the news again. Have you guys heard about this? So basically, there's a whole big fight now going on with The Guardian, the newspaper over in the UK. Allegedly giving out a password.
Not allegedly.
Well, okay. I was going to say more, but go ahead.
They printed the password to a WikiLeaks encrypted file in their book. The Guardian wrote a book, and the password was published in it. In order to decrypt the file, of course, you have to have the file. So there's all this kind of blame passing about whose fault it is. But anyway, the file's out there and the password's out there. So lots of people got access to the complete unredacted cache of all these cables.
A collection of diplomatic history since 1966 to the present day, pound sign.
Then there's some underscores and capital
underscores,
letters.
Underscores and between the words and capital letters at the beginning of each word. That's the password. Or actually, there's not underscores. There are no underscores there, right?
No, just some places.
The grouping is intentional, okay. So you can search
for
it.
We're not going to tell you where the underscores are. Let that be the last challenge to figuring out the password. But yeah, the password is out there. Now, is this the insurance file? Is that the file we're talking about here?
Apparently, it's a different file.
It's a different file, so maybe we don't have copies of this file.
But you don't need a copy anymore. Now the unencrypted stuff is on WikiLeaks' website.
Yeah, but I
want
to decrypt it. I mean, that's, the fun is in the decrypting of it all.
Hey, Emmanuel?
Yes, go ahead, Bernie.
I'm wondering, did nobody at The Guardian, or at least this reporter, understand that publishing a password like that was a really bad idea? And I think, didn't they say that they thought it was only a temporary password? Well, how can there be a temporary password for an encrypted file? I don't understand their rationale.
Well, okay, but let me agree with you, but take that one step further. Isn't it also an incredibly bad idea to give a password out to something so sensitive to any media organization? What were they thinking?
Well, they had to. Well, I think there was some speculation that they could have been given to them verbally, and can you remember to do this? But then it would be maybe a less secure password from a standpoint of fewer your bytes, your characters in it, but the whole thing was just handled really badly, I think, on both sides.
Yeah, because if you give the file out, that's one thing. You give the file to The Guardian, and then they leak the file themselves, they give it out, that's obviously on them. But if you give the password, and it's the same password to every single copy of the file that's all over the world, you've lost control as soon as you've given them the password, right, Voltaire?
No, it was only the password to one copy of the file. But if the file is publicly accessible.
One copy of the file, but the file has been copied all over the world, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the really confusing part of the story, because that wasn't until after WikiLeaks' infrastructure went down like a year ago, they people started they basically made copies of it available on BitTorrent and stuff. This is not the insurance copy.
Okay, so it's not the insurance file, but yeah. Copies were made available. And
And they included all the WikiLeaks root folder and all the subdirectories. So
there's a lot of speculation as to how this file got out. We know how the password got out there, but the file. One story is that it was on a hidden directory on a WikiLeaks server, which someone could find it just using a brute force attack to find all the directories on there. But for The Guardian to what was the whole point in publishing a verbatim password?
Well, what I don't get is they published the password, but it was months went by before anybody realized that there was any harm caused.
That's funny. In other words, there was a stink at the CCC camp about this. Apparently, the guy who was trying to get OpenLeaks off the ground apparently had a hand in this. In this controversy, and got kicked out of CCC right around the time of the maker, or right around the time of the CCC camp, and it was before for apparently telling other people that this was out there, and it's just a whole lot of controversy and gossip and rumors going on. But the bottom line is there are now hundreds of thousands of files out there that are unredacted that have this is. U.S. State Department considered confidential messages, like they call them cables, with sources of people, like confidential sources of people that could possibly be harmed physically by their governments for now knowing that that they were providing confidential information to the U.S. government.
I mean, the drama of how all this data got out there is frankly not very interesting as the data itself. And so there's allegations, of course, that these people will be harmed. There's as yet, no evidence of anyone being harmed, which is not to be totally dismissive of the future possibility. But what is in this document dump is all kinds of evidence of the U.S. government and other world governments harming people, and no one's talking about that.
Well, I'm sure they'll get to that. I know WikiLeaks has been releasing a lot of these documents and calling attention to what's in them. But I think nothing hurts the reputation of WikiLeaks more than an action like this, regardless of who is behind it. And like we've been saying, it's a combination of errors on a lot of different sides, and it's exactly how not to handle this kind of information in the first place.
Well, they WikiLeaks really had no choice. The most unfortunate thing is the media has been able to say, oh, this is what WikiLeaks wanted all along. Because a year ago, they were saying WikiLeaks indiscriminately dumped 600,000 cables when in fact they hadn't. But now they're saying, oh, look, they actually did this time. But that's like not the whole story. The whole story is that their hand was kind of forced to after, because before WikiLeaks put this online themselves, mm-hmm. it appeared once it was like available, like an open secret, it was put on Cryptome, which is kind of like the proto WikiLeaks. And
kind of like the what?
Proto WikiLeaks.
Okay, yes.
Yes. And basically, it was an open secret, and it was kind of like, and the people's lives were just as much danger as if WikiLeaks themselves hadn't released it, because the documents were already released thanks to the Guardian.
Uh huh. So. Well, as far as the public perception of WikiLeaks, it seems like it's out of control. It seems like nobody is in charge of keeping things from falling into the wrong hands or being. Redacted badly, that kind of thing just is, it's a black eye to everybody. And I think we all need to take a good look at how to do this better, because obviously this is not the way to do it. Anyway, we only have a few minutes left. I'd like to take some phone calls, 212-209-2900, if there's anything that you'd like to join in the conversation with. This is Off the Hook here on WBAI. Again, our email address, oth@2600.com, if you want to be one of the six lucky winners of Maker Faire tickets for the weekend after next here in New York City. Again, our phone number, 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I called last week just about the facial recognition software of Picasa, and you only had a few seconds. And you said that if I upload anything on the internet, then it's probably not completely private. I understand that. All I did was download Picasa 3, and I'm wondering if, I haven't made anything public. I'm wondering if I can undo it some way, if I should put fake names for everyone's tags. The main reason why I'm concerned is because on the forum it said, somebody said something about something, and the answer was, if your tags are safe, even if you have to uninstall and reinstall Picasa, that info is on the JPEG themselves and on the Picasa.ini files. Do you have any idea how I can undo this?
I can say I know nothing about this. Anybody in the studio? And Bernie, nobody?
Just because I violated so many people's privacy, and I don't really know if I even did, if I didn't make any of the files public.
Go ahead, Mike.
I mean, I've not worked with Picasa in particular, so I don't think any of us are going to have a specific advice for you in this circumstance. But in general, if you give your data to a big company like Google, which makes Picasa, they'll do whatever they please with it, regardless of what they say they'll do.
And by giving it, that means just downloading their stuff and not uploading anything?
Well, you put the pictures into it.
No, I didn't.
Then I don't understand what happened.
Well, it took 4 hours to download, and while it was downloading, it was automatically capturing pictures.
It was taking pictures off of your computer? That's what it was doing?
Yes, it was. It was taking them, and what it did is it created a people file, and then it had up-close pictures of everyone's faces and said, tag these people.
It sounds like the lesson here is maybe don't download Picasa. It will do strange things like that.
Well, I think she's learned that lesson.
Yeah. I don't know that I have.
I'm sorry. I have used Picasa before, not recently, so I'm not sure what newer versions do. But what it does is it automatically just scans your whole hard drive for image files,
yep,
and organizes them so that the program can easily find them. But if this is uploading this information to Picasa's website, which is Google's, that would be a real security concern, a privacy concern I'd have. Something else wasn't pointed out in your question, but should be raised, is all those photos. If any of those photos were taken with a phone that has GPS, like an iPhone, the geotags, like the physical location of where those pictures were taken, maybe at a person's home or business, mm-hmm, or something, that information is embedded in the EXIF data in the photo file.
Okay, here's
the image
file. I know. Here's a test. I don't have to worry about that, I don't think. But here's a test. I tagged two of them and then went offline and went back online, and I looked up those people's names that I tagged them with, very, very distinctive names, and nothing came up under any of the Picasa. You know, I went to Picasa.com and looked up their name and their pictures didn't come up.
I would definitely encourage you to research software before you install it at all, and be mindful that a lot of photos these days do have tags and information on them. I tried Picasa once and I stopped using it because it was really kind of slow, and I have no idea what they're doing now with the facial recognition. That sounds really interesting, but be mindful of, like, if you're connected to the internet while you're installing something new, even if you've researched it and you're aware that it does these kinds of things, maybe disconnect from the internet while you do that. And also check into your operating system. See if you can disallow that application from communicating with some central location if you're really concerned about it. But there's a ton of software out there. And honestly, I would really take your concern and evaluate, like, if this software is really helping you more than it's hurting you, and if you really want to use it in the end, because there's a lot of stuff out there, and just kind of dig around on Wikipedia and look into some of these things.
And this is advice that I think can apply to any software from any of our listeners. And I think this listener has given us some valuable insight on what to look out for. Thanks for the call. We do have to move on and try to take a couple of others, but very interesting circumstance there. Let's take this call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Is this Emmanuel?
Yes, this is Emmanuel.
Hey, Emmanuel. I'm a customer. I paid for TV Be Gone, but they said you guys haven't got it yet. When you guys going to get it?
Oh, TV Be Gone, I believe it's arrived in New Jersey. It's the newest version, and they haven't yet been delivered to the radio station. As soon as they're delivered to the radio station, though, they will get sent out.
That was the one for the 10 limited, right?
Yes, there are only 10.
I was one of those people.
Okay, if you're one of those people, then you will definitely be getting it.
Okay, so I'll be getting it soon.
Yes, you will be.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up. Okay, you got to go faster than that. That's how it works. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please. I don't know what's going on out there today, but let's try one more. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Well, I always listen to you guys. I'm just calling. Hello?
Go ahead.
The lady just called. I think she called the wrong state, the wrong program, because there's another program that comes on. It's a computer program, and that's the one she called.
Oh.
I listen to you guys always, and I listen to the other program, and I know who she is. She calls all the time. So when you guys said you didn't know what she was talking about, you were right. This was the first time she was calling. I just want to let you know that.
Okay, well, thanks for taking more time talking about that person who called in before. Let's take another phone call. No, let's not take another phone call. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Make it quick.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. You were talking about Maker Faire,
uh-huh.
And I came in at the end. I just want to know where and when.
Okay, it's taking place not this weekend coming up, but the weekend after that, the 17th and 18th of September,
yeah.
At the New York Hall of Science, where the World's Fair used to be.
Uh-huh.
And all the information is at makerfair.com. And if you email us, oth@2600.com, you have a chance of winning some free tickets.
Okay.
All right?
Thanks a lot.
All right, no problem. And that's going to just about do it for us here on this this Wednesday evening. I want to thank everybody for being a part of the show. As we go out with Buzz Aldrin. You want to tell something about this, Kyle? Because you picked this out.
Yeah, it was done for a charity, Buzz Aldrin's rap song.
And Snoop Dogg is involved in this.
Yeah, it was produced by Snoop, so okay. This is the jam.
All right, good. We'll see you next week. Again, if you want to win those tickets, email us by 11 o'clock tonight, oth@2600.com for the Maker Faire taking place in 2 weekends. It's Emmanuel for Off the Hook. See you next week. Good night.
Story about my time on the moon now. The sky was black even though the sun shined on. Moonwalking such a trip, it's so fine when you're walking in the lunar dust. It took us 4 days riding on a rocket to set foot for the very first time. I'm gonna tell you about the meaning of it all. We came at peace for all mankind. Imagine a place above the sky. Riding orbits in 90 minutes time. All you need is to come with me. I'll be your guide.
To go flying into outer space. To see this world as a beautiful place. Oh, man, God, one human race.
Oh, Are you ready to put on your spacesuit? Strap in for the G-Force liftoff. Countdown is getting very close now to the adventure of a lifetime. I've been there, now I say it's your turn. All we gotta do is make the engine burn. Let's take a trip on an orbital spaceship. This is how we will reach the stars.
No atmosphere here. Make sure that you've got your feet underneath you. Lack of gravity. Gravity.
All you need is the rocket experience. What you need is the rocket experience.
Buzz, you're cleared for takeoff.
All you need is the rocket experience.
Roger, understand. We're number one on the runway.
All you need is the rocket experience. It's all you need. A trip to Mars. Our destiny is to the stars.
This is 99.5 FM WBAI New York. We're also streaming online at WBAI.org. I'm Howard. I'm here with Hank and Joe, and now it's time for the Personal Computer Show.
Eight four or eight nine, I think.
And this is Joe King. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show here at WBAI. Hank Key is with me in the studio, and we're trying to raise David Perry, our left coast compatriot, and he'll be with us in just a moment. Hank, while we're waiting for him, what's happening this week?
Well, I've been doing a lot of testing, a little techie work. And remember last week I said that the memory prices were going to drop? They dropped. And so what I did was I did some research and say, okay, what kind of memory, what the price is going for? And so this is for the week of, this week, Labor Day week. And I'd say that because if prices could go up next week, or I doubt it, though. I think it'll hold for the next 2-3 weeks. I took prices where shipping was included, where it was applicable. I did not calculate any taxes, and where there were special deals, I excluded it because there was no sense having a one-day special and then talk about it when people can't get to it. And I looked at all the different kinds of memory, but I excluded the Sony memory stick, the Olympus XD, and the SDXC because it's they're not in ready use right now. And it's very interesting, some of the prices that I see there, and I do have some recommendations.
Well, Hank, I was looking at these prices, and you know, the DDR seems to be
Well, there are three types of DDR.
Yeah, no, but the DDR, which is the current memory codings, seems to be very, very low. Before we get into them, it seems to be a fraction of what the I was buying 2, 3, 4 years ago for my desktops.
Well, how about earlier this year? Well, like I'll mention one thing. Like a lot of people are buying notebooks, okay? So that's they can relate to notebooks. On let me talk about DDR memory first of all. If it's DDR, the maximum capacity on that chip is 1 gigabyte. A DDR2 is 2 gigabytes, and a DDR3 is 4 gigabytes. And my recommendation is buy the maximum for the chip. Don't buy these lower storages because when you have to upgrade, you end up throwing away these lower storage volumes anyway. But
I don't understand what you mean.
No worries. If you buy a DDR3 memory, you buy a 1 gig, and if you want to have 4 gigs, you end up taking out that 1 gig memory stick and putting in a 4 gig, and you end up, let me put it this way, a DDR3 notebook memory for 4 gigs is $20, and I mean, why even worry about 1 or 2 gigabytes? Might as well just go for the 4 gigs.
Absolutely. Okay. But the problem is that when you buy the machine, whether it's a desktop or a laptop, it comes populated with a minimum amount of memory.
Good. You buy the minimum and populate yourself at a much lower cost, because if you ask the manufacturers to do it, that's how they make their margins. Especially like Lenovo, my son bought a ThinkPad, and he said, Dad, should I get 4 gigs more memory? I said, how much they want? $68. I said, what? For 4 gigs? Tell you what. I'll tell you a way to get the memory, 4 gigs, and it cost him about $22. And, I said, you want me to put it in for you? He says, no, I'll put it in myself, and he did. Because if I put it in for him, he would never hear the end of it from me, you know. I mean, he's the engineer, not me. But I do have some recommendations. When you look at some of these prices, when you, like people are, you know, now are buying these micro SD and micro SD HC cards.
Okay, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, there we go. The left.
I know you were all waiting for me.
Well, we were because, yeah. Without having David Perry from the Left Coast joining us, we feel sort of unbalanced.
Yeah. Well,
that. Millions agree you are that unbalanced.
by the way, even with two of us here, it's still unbalanced.
Is Stevie here?
No, he's out in Chicago playing his bongo drums.
Right, we're going to go with the bongo drums.
By the way, they're not bongo drums, but I tease them on that, and I always get to them on that. Well, getting back to what I was saying about memory, when you buy, in the 4 and 8 gig capacity area, when you talk about these micro SD memory chips, buy it with the SDHC adapter, and it's only like a buck or two more, because this way you could use it as an SD chip or a micro SD chip. And for a buck or two, you might as well get it with the adapter.
Is there one smaller than the micro?
I'm talking about standard sizes that people use. There are smaller ones, but if they're proprietary, they're not in regular, they're not the regular chips, and there's no sense talking about those.
The SD, aren't there three sizes of SD? There SD, mini SD, and micro SD?
There's SD, micro SD, and there is one smaller than that, but they're not in general use, so I left that out. I also left out the XD, too. Okay, the XD has been around a while. That's from Olympus, but that never took hold.
Not to mention smart cards, smart memory.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, my recommendation is buy, I'll repeat this because you just got on, is that when you buy when you fill a memory slot, fill it with the maximum memory that you can for that chip. The other thing is that when you buy a memory, if you have existing memory, find out what that existing memory is, and you should match it for two things. The front side bus, in other words, the speed of the chip itself, and the CAS latency. The CAS latency is really a fancy term for the time it takes to do a memory access to the controller. And the lower, the better. And as a general rule, the faster it is, when you match up with a slow one, it should work. But when you have different manufacturers, they may not work. And to be on the safe side, you try to match it up to the same. So both the front side bus speed and the CAS latency, if you match that up, it's fine, but buy the maximum memory you can.
Well, there is an exception to that.
Go ahead.
Because I just bought some memory yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was my wife's birthday, and I went out and got her 4 megs.
Wait a minute. Stop. Stop. You're telling me on your wife's birthday you bought her memory?
That's what she wanted.
No.
Oh, the romance of it all.
No, you know, you didn't understand your wife.
We also last week went out to dinner at a very exclusive restaurant.
Wait a minute. David, yeah. You misunderstood your wife. She's talking about your memory to remember what it was like.
You know what? I'm not going there, Hank. I'm just not going there, okay?
So, go ahead. Tell me about your memory.
The memory. So she has a X100 Lenovo ThinkPad.
Mm-hmm.
And X110, whatever it is, right? X100.
Well, the X100.
And so she's running 32-bit Windows, so I only got her 4 gigs of RAM instead of 8, which is what the slots would take.
Yes.
Because in 32-bit Windows, you can only read 3.5 gigs of RAM.
Correct. Well, let me put it this way.
So you get the maximum you can depending on what operating system you are using.
Yes and no. Let me put it this way, all right? The X100E, by the way, is is only with DDR2 memory. So the maximum you can get is 2 gigs on each slot. There's only 2 slots, so it's only 4 gigs anyway.
Right.
But the X220 is DDR3 memory, and you could get 4 gigs on it. And if you had a choice of 2 gigs or 1 4 gig, you get the 1 4 gig because it uses less power. Okay? So instead,
actually, if I have an X220 that I just got that my company bought for me, and I put 8 gig in it.
Yes, that was my recommendation: is fill it up. This is the time to do it. The comment I made, like DDR3 4 gig memory for notebooks, how about $19?
Wow!
And this is not a special. This is shipping included. This is
this is not in brick and mortar.
This was an online store.
Yeah,
yeah, and the best store you can do in person, I did about 25.
Oh, okay.